Well, welcome everyone to Major Gift Metrics, Measuring for Success. I'm Brian Saber, president of Asking Matters, and I am delighted to have you here today for what's going to be a really informative hour. Metrics are really important. And I have to say that for those of you who know the Asking Styles at Asking Matters, I'm a kindred spirit. I'm not a big metrics and numbers person. I'm always intuitively figuring out if I'm in the right place. And then I'm relying on other people who are much better at metrics to make sure we're doing the right thing. But at the end of the day, they are important as our outcomes measurements for all our programs. These are the equivalents for fundraising. And so I'm really delighted to have Amy Eisenstein here today with us. Amy has been on our program before. Say hello, Amy.
Hi, everybody. Yes.
Amy, you all know who she is. That's why you're here today. She's an author, a trainer, a consultant, a speaker. She and I run into each other at conferences here and there. We're both trying to help build the fundraising skills and particularly the major gift skills of our nonprofits. And Amy's got great books out in the field. If you haven't read 50 Asks in 50 Weeks, it's a brilliant book. All of her work is exceptional. One of the things I like most about Amy is that everything is clear and doable. Not a lot of jargon, not a lot of whatever. She's been in the trenches and she writes and presents and trains from that perspective. And so I think you're going to get a lot out of today. Before we jump in, just a quick bit of housekeeping, and then I'm going to turn the hour over to Amy. You should be seeing on the left a slide and on the right a control panel. If you're not, click on that white and orange arrow to expand it. Two things you want to be aware of here. First, audio. Most of us listen today over our computers, and sometimes something goes wrong. Usually it's on your end. Once in a while, it's GoToWebinar. But if you toggle the phone call, you can get a telephone number to call in on. And sometimes just toggling to phone and back to audio will actually clear it up for you. So you can try that. Two is the questions box. If you've got questions, ask them throughout. Amy will be taking them. We'll also be taking them at the end. If you've got any issues, type them in and we can take care of those if they're on our end. And Amy might ask you a question or two along the way, and then we'll be looking in the questions box for your feedback. You will get a link to a PDF of the slides and recording. You'll get that by tomorrow, along with some bonus materials that Amy's going to be providing us. So once again, I'm encouraging you to ask questions along the way rather than keeping them for the end. And now I'm going to turn it over to Amy. So I'm going to change presenters. And then, Amy, you will see something pop up and you should be able to click and show your slides.
Yes, excellent.
And there they are.
I'm just going to make them a little bigger here. Here we go. Okay, you see that?
We got them. Thank
you. We're good to go. All right, great. Hello, everybody. I'm Amy Eisenstein. I'm thrilled to be here. We're going to talk about why metrics matter and really how to measure and grow your major gift program. And so before we can start talking about metrics, we need to talk about how big is major. What do we mean by major gift? And I like to start here because if we're going to talk about major gifts and measure major gifts, we need to be on the same page about what a major gift is. And I really want to say that it's different for every organization. And sometimes when I start talking about major gifts, you know, not people at small and mid-sized organizations, but people who are newer to the field and maybe donors and board members, their head pops to $1 million. Like, that's major, which I completely agree. $1 million is a major gift. But for the vast majority of nonprofits that are raising major gifts, it's anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000, $10,000, maybe $100,000. And of course, up from there. But when I started in the field, I was at a starting fundraising at a battered women's shelter. And there, if an individual donor gave us $5,000, that was a major gift. And we didn't get gifts of that size from individuals very often. And it was really cause for celebration. And we knew it. And then, you know, at my next job, it was at Rutgers University. And they didn't start talking about major gifts until $25,000. That was a long time ago. It was more than a decade ago, much more. But right down the road from Rutgers, you might know, another university. Yep, it's Princeton. And they didn't start talking about major gifts till $100,000 and up. And so I just want to make sure that whatever a major gift is at your organization, that's fine. And we need to measure based on that. Whatever the reality is for your current donor base, whatever connections and relationships your board members bring to the table, that is what a major gift is for your organization. Now, a little over a year ago, I did a research project with Dr. Adrian Sargent, and we looked at over 600 nonprofit organizations and asked them, what is a major gift at your organization? And this is what we found. And so if you're anywhere in here in the $1,000 to $25,000 range, that is what the vast majority of nonprofits consider their beginning major gifts. And if you want the full report, it's at masteringmajorgifts.com/report. But I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, and a major gift is not necessarily $1 million. So let's figure out what it is and what we're going to measure. So in this research report that I just mentioned, we did ask what were the metrics that people were measuring, these 600 organizations were measuring. And what we found was, and it shouldn't come as any surprise, that the number one thing that people were measuring, 83% in fact, were dollars raised, right? Total dollars raised. And actually, we were a little surprised that it wasn't 100%. Why is not everybody measuring dollars raised? But anyways, that obviously is the number one metric that people are looking at. About half the organizations surveyed are measuring number of new gifts. Great. Donor engagement or commitment. That would be great if they were. We're not convinced that many organizations really are doing what they say. But gift size, average gift size, and down from there. So really, the top two things that people and organizations have been measuring are dollars raised and number of new gifts. So let's figure out what we actually should be measuring and how to measure it. But first, I want to actually start with a scenario, a story, if you will. And this is looking at total dollars raised, which is the number one metric that all organizations, well, 83% in this case, are measuring. And I hope you're measuring total dollars raised. But this is sort of a cautionary tale of why it's important not to only measure dollars raised. So let's say we've got your organization, any organization, in year one, and you have 10 donors who give major gifts at $10,000 each. And you are using the fundraising metric, total dollars raised, to report to the board. And you go to your board members and you say, what's obviously $10 times $10,000? So you go to your board and you say, I raised $100,000 this year in major gifts. And they say, fantastic, you did a great job. We celebrate, wonderful. So the very next year, you raise $100,000 again. But this year, 9 of your donors don't give again, or certainly not at that level. And so, but you're just reporting on total dollars raised. And so you go back to the board and you say, great news, we raised $100,000 again. And the board members say, fantastic, you did a great job. But nobody's paying attention to the fact that 9 of your 10 major gift donors didn't give again. So I know it's sort of a silly basic example, but it's true that there's a lot of things that you can measure that will tell you whether or not you're doing a good or not good job in your major gift program. Because if you are measuring donor retention, which is what this is, then you would quickly see that your donor retention rate is plummeting and that your major gift donors are not giving again, and there would be some major red flags about what's going on in your program. And so even though you've raised the same amount of money in major gifts from year one to year two, nobody's alerted to the fact that there's a serious problem in your program because you're not measuring the right things. Okay, so let's talk about major gift amounts and why it's important to know what a major gift is at your organization. So we're going to look at three things. There are three reasons really why it's important to know what a major gift or how much a major gift is at your organization. Number one is donor recognition, right? How are we going to recognize donors at different levels? Are $10,000 donors going to get their name on a plaque on a wall? Are they going to be listed on the website or in your newsletter? Who's going to call them to say thank you? Are they going to get a board thank you call? Are $1,000 donors going to get that type of recognition? So in terms of knowing what your major gift amounts are, it's important for donor recognition purposes. The second reason it's important to know what a major gift is at your organization is for time management. So let's say I ask you, is it worth your time to go out and sit down with somebody for coffee and ask them for $100? I hope you're probably shaking your head no. That's not a good use of your time. So $100 is not a major gift at your organization. It doesn't make sense in terms of time and resources for you to go out and sit down and ask somebody for $100. But let's say we change the amount. Now, let me ask you, does it make sense for you to go out and ask somebody for $1,000? A few of you are probably nodding your head. Yeah, you know what? That would be a good use of my time. We don't get tons of gifts at the $1,000 level, and that would be kind of a big deal for our organization. So, hey, great. That's probably a good low-level major gift amount at your organization. But for those of you who are saying, no, I really can't spend the time going out and asking people for $1,000, those types of gifts come in through the mail and online, then great. What about $10,000? And then probably, hopefully, a lot of you are nodding saying, yeah, you know what? It would be worth my time any day of the week to go out and ask somebody for a $10,000 gift or a $50,000 gift or a $100,000 gift. So in terms of use of your time, needing to know that. And then the third reason, of course, is metrics and tracking. That's what we're going to focus on today. How are you reporting out to the board and your CEO or your executive director? How do you know if you're raising more major gifts? So you have to know what those major gifts amounts are.
Amy? So,
yes.
I thought it might be interesting to ask everyone, what do they consider a major gift of their organization? If they could type it in the questions box.
Oh, good.
Why don't you do that, everyone? What if you have a level, what is that major gift threshold for you? Type it in the questions box. If you don't have one, you can say we don't have one yet.
Yeah.
And Amy, okay. I'll let you know what we're getting a lot of 1,000s. As a matter of fact, I'd say 2/3 of the responses so far are 1,000s. We've got some 5s, 3,000. We have 900, which I find interesting. Joy Nadeau says 900. I'd be curious for the story behind that. Someone says 100 to 1,500. So starting on the low end. Someone said we don't have one, but she'd say 10,000 and her director development would say 5. She's an executive director. So that's okay. Interesting.
Right.
So a range, but to your point, at least half the people on the call today are saying, a thousand.
Good. Okay, good. Thank you for asking that, Brian. Perfect. All right. So let's keep going. So when are metrics useful? Right. So when do we want to use our metrics? You know, report and tracking progress, that seems obvious, and guide decision making towards goals. So that is really important. We don't want to measure anything, and we'll talk about this as we go through, that is not going to inform your decision making. So change the way you're doing things. If you're not going to change the way you're doing things, no matter what the metrics say, then there's no use in paying attention to them. So we want to measure results and not simply action. That's another important point. So when some of the things you might be measuring are calls to donors, And that's fine to measure how many calls do you make to donors, but do they lead to meetings and do those meetings lead to gifts? So we need to measure results, not simply actions. So the fact that you're calling a lot of donors may be wonderful, although I would guess that many of you may be not calling a lot of donors, which is a chronic problem in our sector today. But, you know, we want to make a lot of calls, but if they're not turning into meetings and then turning into gifts, we have a problem as well. So good metrics. Good metrics help compare periods of times or groups of people and things. They also are a rate or ratio to help you determine if you're on track towards your goals, and they point to a necessary change in behavior. So let's talk about what that means. So let's start with vanity metrics. These are things that just make you feel good. And the most obvious example I can give are friends and followers. On social media, we all want to talk about our friends and followers. Do you have 1,000? Do you have 10,000 likes? Do you have 10,000 followers and friends? But if they don't support your organization, if they don't show up for your events, if they don't take action when you ask them to, it is totally irrelevant. And these are vanity metrics. They make you feel good, but they actually don't help your organization at all. So it's wonderful to have a big list if those people do something for your organization, if they show up at your events, if they make a contribution when asked, if they respond to surveys. But you can have all the likes in the world, but if they're not the right people or they're not responding to your calls to action, it doesn't matter. They're just vanity metrics. So they're just making you feel good and feel beautiful, but it's not really helping. So we need to think about those things. Leading metrics indicate what will happen in the future. So some examples of leading metrics might be more calls, more visits, engagement, and asks. So if we ask more, we would assume that we will get more gifts. You know, not always the case, but we're looking into the future. Lagging metrics, on the other hand, are things that have happened in the past. So leading metrics, we're measuring things that will happen in the future. And lagging metrics are like lapsed and former donors. So we're looking at what happened in the past. The donors are gone, but those are metrics that we can look at and use as well. Let's talk about causal versus correlated. Now, causal, one thing causes another, right? So we've got my circle here. So hopefully donors are passionate about your organization. They're engaged. They are engaged. You steward them. You cultivate them. They give, and round in the circle they go. And, you know, we're not sure always what's caused and what's correlated. But let me give you an example of something that is correlated but not causal. So if you look at a chart of events that happen in the summer, then you will see that ice cream eating goes skyrocketing, right? So in the summer, we know that in the summer, rates of people who eat ice cream go up. We also know that rates of drowning incidents also go up in the summer. More people drown in the summer than at other times of year. Now, eating ice cream does not cause drowning, right? So they're not causal, but they are correlated. They still, you know, they might seem to go up at the same time. So you might think that they're caused by one another. So we need to make sure that when we're looking at things that we have a good sense, if we can, when things are actual caused by one another versus simply correlated. So that's something to consider when you're looking at metrics. Now, let's talk about some goal setting, because when we want to measure things, obviously, we're looking at aiming at goals. So we've got SMART goals. Everybody's heard of them, right? Specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. So a specific goal, you're going to call 3 donors per day. Can you measure it? Yes. Is it achievable? Yes. Is it realistic? Yes. Is it, you know, when will you do it? Every day. So 15 calls per week, 3 calls per day. is 750 calls per year. Or even simpler, let's say you make one donor call per workday. I don't know how many workdays do we work, maybe 220, 250, not counting weekends. I don't know how many vacations you take, but I want you to think about how many calls to donors are you making a year right now, and how many could you be? One donor call per day. And I'm not talking, and you don't have to necessarily get them on the phone. You'd probably have to call 30 people to get somebody on the phone, but just leaving a message is okay. But just reaching out and leaving a message. Most organizations that I work with don't even do one call a day. So I would say setting something that's really specific, really measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Can you call, set a goal to call between one and three donors every single day? And, you know, there's a whole variety of things. You could make a list of what am I going to call these donors about? But if we really want to raise major gifts, we need to be in touch with our donors more. And so what could you be calling these donors about every single day? One is top of my list is try and get meetings, right? So clearly there are some people, potential major donors or past major donors that you want to thank and update on how what their gift is being used for. There are people that you want to meet. So meeting, taking a tour, you could go just call to say thank you. So when you're absolutely exhausted of making calls to try and get people to meet with you or come on a tour or volunteer, it's perfectly fine just to call and say thank you. So if you're not doing that already, it's a great way to check off some donor calls. Okay, so those are some small goals that we want to set. But now let's actually talk about how you set your overall major gift goal. And this is going to be about dollars raised. Of course, you know, I talked about how dollars raised isn't the end all be all metric. It's not the only metric. Of course, it's going to be the number one metric that everybody's looking at. How many dollars do you raise? That at the end of the day, that's what people are looking at. But we have to use other metrics around it to inform our decisions. But we do have to set a goal, a major gifts goal. And the first thing before we talk about how to set it, I actually want to talk about how not to set it. And the two most common ways that nonprofit organizations set their major gift goals are actually the two ways that you should not be setting your major gift goals. No surprise there, right? So the first thing I want to mention is that you should not set your major gift goal based on a percentage increase of what you've raised last year, right? Probably the most common way that most organizations, they say we raised $100,000 last year, so we're going to raise 5% more. We're going to raise $105,000 this year. But to me, that is a ridiculous thing to say because it has nothing to do with, well, I shouldn't say it has nothing to do with, but it doesn't take into account all the factors that will contribute towards your goal. So we haven't looked at, do we think realistically that donors are going to give more this year? Do we have reason to believe that we can raise the goal other than we just want to raise 5% more? That's great that we want to raise 5% more, but not why not 10% or 50%? And do we have reason to believe that donors are going to give more? So, and have we taken into account the fact that somebody gave a special anniversary gift? Well, if there were some extenuating circumstances why people gave more or less this year, that has to be factored into next year's goal. So just a flat, we're going to raise 5 or 10% more than we raised last year is not a good way to set your major gift goal. The next way that organizations raise set their goal, of course, is the hole in their budget. So they'll say, okay, we have expected revenue of $100,000 and we have expected expenses of $150,000. So our fundraising goal is $50,000 because that is the hole in our budget. Well, that also has absolutely nothing to do with your ability to fundraise or raise major gifts. You haven't taken into account what donors you have or who wants to give or donor history or anything. And so maybe you can raise a lot more than that. Maybe you can't even raise close to that amount. And that is not a good way to set your fundraising goal. So not by the hole in your budget and not just a percentage over last year. So
Amy?
Yes.
Amy, can I ask you, I want to ask you a question about that, because that is one of these frustrations for so many of us in working in nonprofits over the years. We're given numbers to work with. And I've said over the years, you know, don't accept them, which is easier said than done.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if I'm a director of development and someone is forcing me into a number because that's what they need to report to the board, because that's the hole or whatever, that is a precarious position. It's but still easier said than done to say walk away. How do you?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a concern of others.
No, absolutely. It's a great point. And I think that one of the important things is to be able to, I mean, I'm hoping that today I'm giving you tools and resources to be able to go to your CEO and go to your board and say, listen, this fundraising nonprofit experts say these are the two ways not to set our goals. But here is, okay, so I'm getting to the slide right now to this, the way that we should be setting our goals. And moving forward, can we try this approach, right? Or can we have a hybrid of the two? Let's figure out, based on Amy's recommendations, which I'm about to tell you right now, how we figure out what a good, appropriate fundraising goal is. And then let's look at either a percentage over what we raised last year or the hole in our budget and see how far apart the numbers are. And then we have to figure out what are we going to try new and differently to close that gap. So let's now go through this slide and figure out what is an appropriate, a more appropriate major gift goal. And then you can go and say, okay, what I figure based on the prospective donors we have and my best educated guess here and calculation is that we should be able to raise about $150,000. Now, you know, my fundraising goal is $250,000. So we need to sit down and figure out what additional resources or activities we're going to embark on that allows us to think that we'll be able to get to that extended goal, right? So sitting down and having a conversation like that, you know, as you said, Brian, easier said than done. But I want to give you the tools, the best practices, the right way so that you can have those educated conversations with your CEO, executive director, and board members. You want to jump back in, Brian, or should I keep going?
No, keep going. That's great.
Okay. All right. So here is a sample gift table. You've probably seen this before, especially if you've done a capital campaign, but really it's a good tool for an annual campaign and a major gift project. And so in order to figure out what your goal is, you need to identify your current prospective major gift donors. Now, we're not going to talk about that in detail on how to do that on this call, but there's lots of resources. I'm sure Brian's talked about it. I have them on my website of how to identify who your best prospective major gift donors are. So figure out who they are and how much you think is appropriate to ask them for. So to get to $1 million goal, I just used round numbers, but you know what? If your numbers are $100,000, if that's your major gift goal, just lop some of the zeros off a zero off, and you'll have the same exact table here. So basically, to get to $1 million, we need, the top row is one gift of $200,000. Now, in order to get a gift of $200,000, in order to be relatively confident that we can, we need four prospective donors who are qualified that we have reason to believe could and might give our organization $200,000. So one of these four people is not going to be Oprah Winfrey if she's never given to your organization and nobody at your organization has any way to contact her. I mean, that's not right. So
yeah,
these,
Amy, I want to share something. I have a little adage about this, because in all the years I've been back in New York, I'm sure you've had this, people have constantly told me to go solicit Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And I say, I don't know Mike Bloomberg. If you don't know Mike Bloomberg, If you don't have a contact to him, he is not a prospect. He's a suspect.
Yeah, exactly.
And I spent very little time going after suspects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. So basically, and so if you have four qualified prospects, that means four people that you have reason to believe could, you know, they have the ability, they have the capacity, and they might because they've given to you before, or, you know, they volunteered or shown up at your event. If you have reason to believe that they could and might give your organization $200,000, those are four people that you can list here, and you can be reasonably confident that you'd get a $200,000 gift. Now, the three people that don't make that $200,000 gift, they don't disappear. They actually just drop to the next column. So, or the row, I'm sorry, the down to the next row. So if you need two gifts of 100,000, hopefully, you know, some two of those four people who didn't give you the 200,000 would give you the 100,000. And on down you go. So you're actually tying specific people's names to potential dollar gift amounts to get your estimated goal. And like I said, if these numbers are totally outrageous to you, then you can just lop some zeros off, but then the numbers are exactly the same. So you can do a gift table for $100,000 if that's a goal for your major gift program this year, and figure out how many donors do you need to get to $100,000. So here for this particular gift table, if you look at it, for $1 million, if you add up the numbers in the darkest blue column all the way to the left, 30, 15, 45, it's about 50 donors to get to $1 million. So for $100,000, actually, you know, you only need 10 or 20 donors. So we're not talking, so, you know, based on what Brian did before in terms of what's a major gift at your organization, honestly, some of your goals are going to be $25,000 for your whole major gift program. You might have one or two $5,000 to $10,000 donors, and then everybody else is a $1,000 donor. That's a major donor at your organization. And so the reality is we're talking about 20 people to get to $25,000, $50,000, or even $100,000. So we're not talking, really, major gifts is about the committed few. It's not about the masses. Okay, so it's important to set high and low goals. I'm a big fan of setting reach goals and sort of low major gift goals that you definitely think you can get. For each person on your list, like in the last chart, I had you identify those 10, 20, 30 people that you're going to be looking to for major gifts. Assign them each a high gift amount and a low gift amount. And the low gift amount may be what they've been giving in the past. So if they've been $1,000 donors or $500 donors to your organization, that's a low goal. And then if you've never sat down with them in person and asked for a major gift, I like to say, without knowing anything else about them, I like to multiply that amount by five. So if they've been giving $1,000 to your organization annually, and you're going to sit down with them and ask them for a major gift for the first time, I like to start with a number around $5,000 to ask. So that might be your high goal. And then you add up all your low, you know, the 10 people's low goals and the 10 people's high goals, and you have your high and your low goal. And that gives you something to really reach for. But then your low goal is pretty realistic too. Okay, so my friend and colleague Peter Drury came up with this probability matrix. So I named it after him. And it is a good way to project what you're able to raise. So you can see down the left-hand column, donor A, you're going to ask them for $100,000, or in your case, maybe $10,000, which is fine. You are guesstimating the probability of them giving that 75%. So you can put down, in terms of a realistic goal, $75,000 or $7,500 if you're lopping off a zero. And that's fine, too, to get to. It's just another tool to get to a good goal. All right. So plug in your questions. I know that I'm going quickly and it's a lot of information, but we're going to go through three steps for major GIF metrics. So one is identify the best metrics for your organization. That's going to be the first step, and what you can and want to measure. So listen, I'm actually going to give you a whole bunch of things to measure, and I want you to pick two or three that you're going to add to what you're already measuring this year, because the last thing I want you to do is be stuck at your desk and not getting out and meeting with people because you're spending so much time measuring things. So you're not going to measure all the things I measure. You're going to identify the best metrics for your organization, keeping in mind whatever you get as a result of those metrics, that you're going to be able to change your actions based on the results, right? Because there's no point in measuring things that are not going to inform your decisions. So the second thing we're going to look at is determine how to track them. Three, make informed decisions. And of course, you're going to set these metrics, keeping those goals in mind. So identifying the best metrics. You know, why do I want to measure what I'm going to measure, and what will I do as a result? So those questions are important to ask yourself when you're figuring out what are the best metrics for your organization. Why do I want to measure these things, and what will I do as a result of what I find? So determining how to track, you know, what technology do you have at your disposal? Do you have a donor database that tracks some of these things? Do you need to invest in new technology? Are you keeping track by hand? Who's responsible for tracking? Who's responsible for analysis? And how often will analysis take place, right? How often do you need to review the data for it to be meaningful? Maybe quarterly is enough, maybe annually is enough. It depends on how much data you have. But really, who's responsible for tracking, who's responsible for getting it into that donor database, and who's responsible for grinding out those numbers at the end of the quarter or the year or monthly, whatever it is. And then make informed decisions. So if you're not going to act on the results, there's no point in measuring those metrics. All right, so let's keep going. So listen, this is a major gift metrics grid or evaluation tool that I give to people who take my course. So I want to give it to you now for free for being on the webinar. It's masteringmajorgifts.com/metrics. You can pick up this worksheet. We're going to go through it column by column. But Brian's going to send you the link afterwards. So don't panic if you don't have the link yet. You'll be able to get this tool. So these are the metrics that I think are the most important things to get started with. And like I said, pick the two or three that mean the most to you. So the first one is dollars requested versus dollars received. And you, of course, dollars received, that's gifts raised, total gifts raised. Hopefully you're already tracking that. What you may not have ever thought about is tracking how much you're requesting. So let me give you an example. For the year, let's say you raise $100,000, but you have no idea how much you actually asked for because you're not tracking it. But over the course of the year, you asked for 10 or 20 major gifts, and it actually totaled $1 million. You put out there $1 million in requests, and you raised $100,000. Now, I would say that if that's the case, you were way too aggressive in your asking. You didn't do enough research or cultivation or planning in advance. Your ask amounts were way too high, way too aggressive, or you asked too many people before they were ready. Now, the opposite is also true. So if you asked for $100,000 and you received all $100,000, then I would say you're not being aggressive enough. You're being way too conservative. You're asking for the safest possible amounts, and you're only asking the people that you absolutely know will make a gift. So what I'm looking for here is actually somewhere in the range of 70 to 80%. So if you go out and ask 10 people for $10,000 each, so you ask for a total of $100,000 in major gifts this year, I actually want your total dollars raised to be somewhere between $70,000 and $80,000. To me, that will indicate that you are being aggressive, but not too aggressive, that you're getting out there and you're asking for big amounts, And that, you know, that you're getting most of the gifts you're asking for. And to me, that somewhere in that 70 to 80% is a real sweet spot. Okay. So here's my examples. I forgot to go to them. I forgot I had them. But so if you request $100,000 and you receive $100,000, you're too conservative, right? You're not asking aggressively enough. And again, here's my example. If you request $100,000, but you only receive $20,000, you're being way too aggressive, right? Okay. So the next thing on my worksheet, my next metric that we're looking at are asks made versus gifts received. So this is similar to the idea that we just looked at. So this is the number of people that you're asking. So if I ask for 10 major gifts this year and I get all 10, again, too conservative. I'm playing it too safe. I'm waiting too long to ask people until I'm 100% sure that they're going to say yes, or I'm only asking the people that I know are going to say yes. So, and if I ask for 10 major gifts this year and I only get one or two of them, I'm jumping the gun. I'm being too aggressive. I'm not doing my research. I'm not doing my homework. So again, if I ask for 10 major gifts, I want to get about eight of them, seven or eight of them. I mean, maybe 100% of the people will give me partial gifts, and that's okay too. But it's something to think about. It's something to be aware of.
Amy?
Yes.
Interesting question just came up. When you're measuring these asks versus gifts, do you include unexpected gifts, those you didn't ask for but received out of?
Interesting.
Yeah.
that's funny. How often does that happen? I think you get it as a bonus, and you know, listen, I don't know. That's so funny. Nobody's ever asked me that before. In my philosophy, in my world, you have to ask for the gifts you get. But yeah, when you get lucky enough that one shows up. But listen, I would actually indicate that with a star and say, yeah, you know, this one showed up and it's not likely to happen in the future. And it's not a repeat gift. Or if it is, we're going to have to fold it into our asks or work with the donor to see, you know, how that happened or something. So sure. You know, listen, this is part art, part science. And so you're going to have to measure that. If you want to give yourself credit, go for it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And yeah. Yeah. Okay. Retention and acquisition, right? The percent retention, donor retention is the number of donors you keep, the percentage of donors giving repeat gifts. And the acquisition is the number of new donors. So obviously you want that retention number to be as high as possible. If it goes down year over year, you know, that's a big red flag, an indicator that there's an issue. Acquisition, you do need some new major gift donors to come into the fold every year. So are you acquiring any new major gift donors? And then the next one is meaningful visits, right? So this is when you're sitting down with a donor face to face talking about the organization and their potential giving. So, you know, I worked at organizations where major gift officers were counting a visit if they saw their donor at their gala or at another event at the organization. To me, that is not when the donor agrees to sit down with you and have the conversation about giving. And so I'm not counting that as a meaningful visit. It's wonderful to have your donors show up on at your organization for events and come to things. That's wonderful. You definitely want to be aware of that and track that. But in terms of major gifts metrics, you want to know when you're getting donors to actually sit down and have a conversation with you. And then, of course, we want to measure things like average gift size, median, mean, mode. You're tracking if gifts are going up or down. The reason that I have average gift size, and then I say minus outliers, right? Because if you get $1 million bequest, but all of your other major gifts are in the $10,000 range, that is going to skew that number so badly. So, you know, you want to use common sense when putting down the average gift size and take those things into account. And then the last metric I'm looking at is stewardship efforts. And that is a major leading indicator. We were talking about leading and lagging indicators before. So how are you following up with the donor? How are you saying thank you? Are they getting a call? Are they getting a handwritten note? Are you taking them out to lunch to say thank you? Are you following up 6 or 8 months later to let them know how their gift was used? So how are those donors being stewarded? Because this is a really important leading indicator of whether or not they will make future gifts. So this directly points to your donor retention, your potential donor retention rates. So figuring out, really figuring out, how are you stewarding your donors?
Amy.
Yeah.
So we had an interesting comment from Colleen when we were talking about those unsolicited gifts.
Yeah.
And she said she counts them if it's in a major gift officer's portfolio and they've been receiving stewardship.
Oh, perfect. And cultivation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, you know, it's funny because while you're talking, I can think this out more and I'm thinking, well, what else would I say on that subject? And I think it's this. And it refers back to what you just mentioned with outliers. You know, if you're getting a handful of gifts each year and that you haven't asked for, and that's part of a big major gift program. You've got 100 gifts you asked for, and there always seem to be 5 or 6 that you don't ask for that come in. Just as with planned gifts. You can start to account for that, right? In planned giving, planned giving programs, you do put in a number for what you expect from those gifts, even when you don't know where they're at the moment.
Yeah. Right? No, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
yeah,
in a small program, I wouldn't do that because it would skew things. But some of the people on the line here, given the numbers they gave us, probably have much more significant programs, and I think they could include a little bit of that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point because you're right. You're cultivating them, you're stewarding them, you have been all year. And so even if you haven't asked them, then they get your mail solicitation or your online solicitation, and you have been cultivating them and stewarding them. So surely a result of your efforts have made that gift possible. So good point. Okay, so dollars raised, a return on investment, something you want to think about. How much does it cost to raise a dollar, right? You know, this is just another metric that you want to be aware of, think about. Everybody's always on this one. So I wanted to make sure that we included it. But I want to then go into, we've talked about the quantitative, and I want to talk about qualitative metrics that I think most organizations are not measuring, and I just want to think about it. So I've got this great cartoon, and the guy's shouting, "You, yes, you, what do you think of our organization?" And whoever it is, "I'm stunned by the sophistication of our donor research." But all kidding aside, you actually should be doing some of this. So let's look at what your donor surveys, whether you do them online or actually in person, sitting down with your donors and asking some of these questions are really important. So you can ask on a scale of 1 to 5. And like I said, you can send this out online to your major donors and you can take it around to a handful of them and ask them, you know, just in conversation, if they would rate on a scale of 1 to 5, how much do you care passionately about the charity? XYZ charity is something I'm very committed to on a scale of 1 to 5. Hopefully you're getting 4s and 5s, but if not, you need to know that and ask them about it. How satisfied do you feel as a donor? How engaged do you feel? This is a really important one. If you're getting scores of 1, 2, or 3, you've got work to do. I trust the leadership team to use my donation as intended, a big one. So if you're getting anything but 4s and 5s, you've got work to do. I trust the leadership team to be open and transparent. Another one. So those questions are actually all on this worksheet that I'm going to send you or that you can download. You'll have the link for, Brian will send you. So anyways, I just want to reiterate that you should be asking some of these questions when you're meeting with your donors in person. Don't just rely on surveys. Do it both ways. Okay, and then we'll wrap up in just a minute and get to questions. So avoid analysis paralysis, right? I mean, you want to make sure that you're measuring things that you're going to be able to act on and make decisions based on. And so we don't want to be paralyzed by all the metrics. So what, thinking about in advance, what action will you take as a result of the metrics you track? That's what I want to leave you with. And then we'll go to questions. And here are the two links, but Brian will send them out. So you can either pick up that research report and, of course, the metrics worksheet. So thank you all for being here today. And Brian, if we have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Great. So I'm going to take back the screen and go back to questions. So we did have a couple of questions, Amy. So obviously, dollars raised is really important. Can we say that is still the most important metric? And what's the most important metric if you're just getting started? Or what are the two if we're assuming dollars raised is one of all of these, which you think is two?
Yeah, I mean, right. Obviously, dollars raised is going to be the most important metric. There's no getting around that. And I would not even suggest it. You have to measure dollars raised. And it is appalling that in the survey that we did of the 600 organizations, that only 83% of the organizations were measuring dollars raised. I mean, you have to measure dollars raised, but you have to also look at other factors. I think if I was to pick one other, only one other, I'd probably pick donor retention. Because that is going to be your most important indicator of things to come. If you can't keep your existing donors, especially in your major gift program. So listen, I want you to run donor retention both for your full donor list and then separate out those major gifts, which is why it's important to know what a major gift is. So anybody who gave 1,000 or more at your organization or 10,000 or more, measure donor retention for that file only. It better be much higher than your full donor list. And you want to focus on that because the lifetime value of those donors is exponentially higher. And if you are cycling through your major donors as fast as you are, your general donor database, you are in real trouble. So I would say that if you're only going to measure two, it's going to be total dollars raised and it's going to be donor retention.
Great. And I would agree, actually, because donor retention is such an issue in our field and it's so much easier to retain someone than to try and get a new donor. So that would be big for me. But before I take the next question, I just have to share that Anne said she'd go for the cookies, not the salad. Referring to that last slide.
Okay, perfect.
I have to say I was looking at the stack of cookies as well. So Susan asked, how are you measuring the stewardship metric? Like, we know you've got a rating scale, and then what do you do? You know, at what point?
Right.
And what point do you have an issue? How do you set benchmarks?
I think you want to think about as a team in your office, your executive director, any development staff, and then a board member or two, think about what you think is a good and reasonable stewardship plan for your major donors, right? So you've asked in person. So of course, at the end of the meeting, you say thank you. That you're not going to measure. Immediately afterwards, what happens? Does the development director send a thank you email? The formal official thank you note or tax receipt can't go out until the gift shows up. But certainly a board member can call and say thank you for that person agreeing or making the commitment or pledge. You know, at what point does the executive director write a handwritten note? So is there going to be a plaque or a naming opportunity depending on what the level of the gift is? So, and then are you following up and thanking and letting them know how their gift was made? So, or how their gift was used, I'm sorry. So you want to follow up 6 or 8 months later and sit, if you asked in person, you want to go back to them in person and say, listen, I'd love to come talk to you and let you know the impact that your gift had on our organization, the difference that it made. And so, you know, I would say that you want to track that you're thanking major donors in at least 3 to 5 ways personal ways. So board member call, executive director handwritten note, thank you follow-up in person, follow-up to let them know the impact of the gift several months later. And these need to happen before you can ask for the next gift.
Great. And Marissa has a question. So she's just gotten a grant to hire their first major gift officer with a specific goal of increasing major gifts from $100,000 to $300,000 in 3 years. Somewhat arbitrary, but they got the grant. And can we reasonably measure MGO success based on $50,000 more per year or something like that? And if so, what are the other steps to set up for success?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, start with this metrics worksheet, download it, right? So all the if you have a full-time major gift officer, they can definitely track the six or seven things we just talked about. So how much are they asking for versus how much they're raising? How many gifts are they asking for? Stewardship, meaningful visits, donor retention. Those, I think, are basic I'm just giving you the basic metrics, right? This isn't a complicated dashboard. It may be complicated for a really small organization that either doesn't have a development director or only has one development staff member. This is a perfectly adequate or substantial metric sheet. But for a full-time major gift officer, they should be able to keep track of all of these metrics on this worksheet. And, you know, honestly, I would start there. I don't know. without plugging my major gifts class, I'll leave it at that.
So I have a question from at the beginning when you were looking at those results from the survey you mm-hmm. and Adrian did, and we got to donor engagement, which was 40 some odd percent or supposedly tracking it. And you said you think they're not working, that number is high and you're surprised by it. Why are you surprised?
Yeah. So donor engagement is more like they could be tracking it in a few ways. One is, you know, do people show up at events and things like that? But we were looking at how engaged are people and asking them in a survey form or in person, you know, how engaged do you feel on a scale of 1 to 5? And I just don't know of that many organizations that are actually doing that. So, we kind of were questioning the results of that particular question. Maybe it wasn't worded well. But anyways, yeah.
Got it. So there's one more question that we got earlier. It's not exactly related to what we've got here, but since we've got a minute left and it came in. And it's an interesting question. Is it ever appropriate to ask a donor in an annual fund letter, last year you gave X amount, this year I'm asking for Y amount?
Yeah, I think actually that is considered best practice, that you should be asking for specific amounts, and reminding donors how much they gave in the past is perfectly appropriate. And so if you have the technology to do that and get it right, what we've found, and Brian, I hope you agree, to my knowledge, when people are asked for specific amounts, they always give more than when they're not asked for specific amounts. So most appeal letters you get don't have a specific dollar request amount. I actually encourage you to test your list. If you can split test, and maybe half your list, leave blank, and then the other half ask for specific increased amounts and see what happens, and then you'll know for sure for next year. But asking for specific amounts is always good.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I actually, just from personal experience, the first part is it bothers me no end when I get asked for a gift and people don't tell me what I last gave and when I last gave it, because I'd like to give to all my charities at least once a year, but I don't necessarily want to give the same gift twice because I have in mind what I'm giving overall. And I think it's a courtesy and relationship building to share that. That's the first piece. And the second piece, to your point, is I'm a big believer you always ask for an exact amount. That in asking for an exact amount, you you're making the ask feel more important. It feels as if there's been some thought about the donor, where the donor's giving was at, where the organization is at, et cetera, and that this specific gift reflects that. There's a story behind it, as opposed to just asking for money again and again. So I'm wholeheartedly behind you on that. So, well, thank you, Amy. I want to thank you for being here. This is really enlightening. There's a lot to chew on. I think people are really going to appreciate those two downloads. We send them tomorrow. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's really been a delight. And just as we're leaving, I want to share that we've got Fundraising Masters coming up all spring and all year. In March, our Asking Matters expert, Joe Tumalo, is going to be talking about planned gifts and how to get them, which is a big topic. 8% of all gifts are bequests. And if your organization isn't going for them, someone else is. And in April, Asking Matters expert Sue Kindred will be talking about story and case for support, two very important topics. We have our Fundraising 101 coming up at the end of this month for your board members if you want them to hear important messages about giving and getting and what best practice is. And we're going to be reopening membership at Asking Matters in early March. So you're all on our mailing list. You'll be hearing more about this. I just wanted to share that it's coming up. Thank you all again. If we didn't get to your question, because I see a couple coming in right now, we'll try to answer those offline for you. So again, thank you, Amy. Thank you, everyone else, for joining us today, and have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye.